How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Tons of news to talk about in pro wrestling and MMA. Last night was UFC 145, Jones versus Evans. Still, your UFC light heavyweight champion, John Jones. We're going to talk about that show and all of the news taking place in UFC today. And there is a lot of it. We've got a hearing coming up this Tuesday for Alistair Overeem. And in the meantime, he has been dropped from UFC 146 in Las Vegas. He's out even before the hearing. We'll tell you why that is. His latest excuse for failing a drug test with a 15-to-1 testosterone, epitestosterone ratio. Where that leaves UFC 146, where that leaves Overeem. And, of course, the upcoming Brazil show as well, which on Tuesday we will also know the fate of. Maybe moving to Las Vegas on July 7th. Anderson Silva versus Chael Sonnen for the 185-pound title. We'll talk to you about that. Plus, a bunch of pro wrestling news. Next weekend is the Extreme Rules pay-per-view, headlined by Brock Lesnar versus John Cena. This past Sunday was the TNA Lockdown pay-per-view, where, in fact, James Storm did not win the TNA heavyweight title. We'll talk to you about that, plus the ratings for both Raw and Impact. Coming off big shows, Lockdown, the second biggest show of the year, WrestleMania, the biggest show of the year. How have the ratings been doing? Is it cause for concern? Also, we're going to talk about the upcoming events in all of these different organizations, including Friday, in fact. There's a show Friday here in Kent, Washington. We're going to go to the TNA show. Talk to you a little bit about TNA house shows. Fun time. We'll talk about all of the news as well, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, plus my trip to Cauliflower Alley last Wednesday night for their annual banquet. So much stuff to talk about today. We're going to be back in a moment after the break to break it down. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday afternoon, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Last night was UFC 145, Jones versus Evans. And when the smoke cleared, John Jones, still your UFC 205-pound champion. Mike, were you in any way surprised?
No. In the official picks, I actually picked Rashad Evans.
Well, then how are you not surprised?
Well, just for this reason. I mean, it's not like you would have put any money on Rashad Evans going into this. It was just one of those things where Rashad Evans is in incredible shape. With his hand speed and his ability to fight inside, I thought, okay, it comes down to this. If there was anybody out there that was going to beat John Jones anytime soon, I thought it was going to be Rashad Evans, although I was not, you know, exactly, you know, again, I wouldn't put any money on the possibility of it. I just thought if there's going to be one guy that could possibly do it, it's going to be Rashad, and it just obviously did not come to pass. And John Jones, again, last night, I know now they're setting up he and Dan Henderson, and for a lot of reasons, that is going to be an incredibly fun fight, maybe for a round, but John Jones is scary incredible, and you used to talk about last year the possibilities that everybody was excited about the possibility of Anderson Silva and GSP. You know, the chances of that happening I always thought were relatively small, and I think it's even smaller the possibilities that Anderson Silva would want to face John Jones, but it does lead to at least some buzz that can be created over a super fight possibility, because I'm not exactly sure who's going to stop John Jones anytime soon. It's going to be a mistake caused by John Jones that could possibly do it. And again, I don't know who that person is going to be coming up.
Two things about that fight. First off, I think that Rashad Evans knowing something about Jones, that would have paid off for him like 2 years ago. You know, when they were still training together or shortly after the split. But it's been a year and a half, 2 years, and I don't care what you knew, what secrets you had on John Jones 2 years ago. That was 2 years ago. This is a, I don't want to say like a totally different fighter, but he's a significantly improved fighter from 2 years ago. So I think whatever secrets Rashad had, they didn't really pay off last night. That's patently obvious. The other thing was just the physical state of both men at the end of the fight. Rashad Evans was, I don't want to say he was just hanging on, but that dude was tired there at the end of that fight. And John Jones was fresh as a daisy, as they say. And when you think about the next challenger for Jones, that being Dan Henderson. Dan Henderson, if nothing else, has had problems with cardio. So yeah, Dan hits really hard. If Dan can get inside and hit the dude, then yeah, he can beat John Jones. But if John can just, you know, keep his distance and such for two rounds or so, Henderson's probably going to gas out, and then he's going to be, well, it's probably not going to be a good night for Dan Henderson there by the end.
No, and Jones, it's you know, that's one of the most overrated things going into this fight was, you know, Evans knows secrets about John Jones. And like you said, Jones is just too fluid with how he's improved. And he, in the second round last night, where and I believe that was the round where Rashad actually landed some hard stuff, and it was probably the round that the judges had given Evans. They gave him one round. I didn't give him any. But that was probably the second round. But by the end of that round, I mean, Jones was throwing the elbow. I mean, boxers don't throw punches as well as he was stepping in there and throwing elbows. And yes, granted, Rashad Evans is 5'11", and Jones is 6'4", and has got the, you know, an NBA player-style wingspan. But just his ability to do that so fluidly against a guy who, again, it's not like Rashad Evans is, you know, some bum now on the street. He's still, I mean, one of the top guys at 205. And for Jones to go and do that and incorporate some of the stuff that he did, they talked a lot about his kickboxing that has improved greatly. It's just, it's absolutely incredible.
Your thoughts on the, I guess, the show as a whole. I mean, I didn't get a chance to watch at least one of the Fuel fights, but ended up, I guess that would only went a minute and a half anyway, so... You know, there were some moments live. I was talking to Dave Meltzer, who was there. There were some moments live, and we had a whole bunch of decisions in a row that these fans were not happy with UFC 145. But by the end, we had a string of quick finishes, quick knockouts, some submissions. And by the end of the night, it was not the best show of the year or anything like that, but I thought it really turned around into a pretty damn good show there by the end.
Yeah, I thought it really was, too. You know, they didn't get, you know, FX probably could have used a massive knockout or something like that. I thought Brown Thompson was good just as a, an example of how poor Thompson is on the ground and how, you know, strong Brown was with those elbows. And the Medeski-Nguani fight wasn't too bad either, although, again, that probably could have used some knockouts or something like that on FX leading into the show. But once the pay-per-view started, I mean, I thought it was a very, very good show, and I think it's actually going to do well pay-per-view-wise, too. You know, the biggest surprise to me was Miguel Torres, who I couldn't believe in my mind, and I don't want to say that it's over for him or anything like that because he can still beat a lot of guys, but Michael McDonald, I'm just really surprised in the speed and the way that Miguel Torres just got obliterated by Michael McDonald.
I thought that Che Mills had a chance. In fact, I predicted Che Mills foolishly, and Che Mills did all right standing early in the fight with Rory McDonald, but Rory took him down, and once it ended up on the ground, he ate his lunch. And this, of course, the semi-main event on the show. Whole idea was to get people to know who Rory McDonald was, build him up as a future contender, and, of course, that's going to cause some potential issues, as in his division, of course, is his mentor, George St. Pierre. And both guys have stated that they do not want to fight each other. They'd rather switch weights than fight each other. And personally, I don't think a Rory McDonald GSP fight is... should be happening anytime soon. I think we're at least a year or two away from that. But if the day comes, you know how Dana is. He's not going to be happy with the idea of teammates not fighting. In fact, he said that. He goes, if Rory McDonald took one look at GSP's bank account, he would want to kill that guy. So we'll see. I don't think Rory McDonald is ready yet. I thought he was great on the ground, but his stand-up, I mean, you know, Che Mills was putting a beating on him on the feet until he got taken down. And Rory McDonald needs to get in there with some guys that can stop the takedown before anybody starts talking about him being a threat to George St. Pierre.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And something tells me, I mean, say they do this fight in, you know, December of 2013, and of course they're going to do it in Toronto or Montreal. And, you know, I have a feeling whatever money would be on the line that would be shown to Rory McDonald, that may change his mind. And, you know, Joe Rogan mentioned that during the show as well. And I don't know if that's going to be something that ends up being pushed a little bit more by the UFC. But, you know, we've heard it so many times in the past, you know, with different camps and, you know, Koscheck and Fitch not wanting to fight and Shields to Diaz, that sort of thing, where guys are never going to fight each other. And Joe Rogan even said it, and it's, you know, something that needs to take hold is, you know, yes, it's great to have teams, but this is an individual sport. And you know, the whole Rashad Evans, John Jones thing, I mean, look at the amount of attention that was built off of that, and it's not like they trained together, you know, for decades or anything like that, and they were incredibly tight. You know, it obviously, you know, caused some friction, and it ended up being something that, you know, this was, it's amazing how with all the injuries and stuff that this has been built up for so long, and you know, you see the, you know, the effect that it had, and I'm sure it's going to be the effect that you have on the buy rate too, because I think it's going to do, you know, north of 700,000 buys. People may look at it as disappointing and say, well, you know, last year would have did 850 or something like that if it wasn't so dragged out, but I actually think it's a, you know, a benefit for the whole thing, and I think they're going to do well with it.
Ben Rothwell killed Brendan Schaub. Brendan Schaub just can't take a punch. And in the heavyweight division, you got to be able to take a punch. And I don't know what this means for him, but he probably will not be a contender anytime soon.
No, Brendan Schaub is, you know, he fits well on Fuel. He'd be a fine guy to put on Fuel and big, you know, because again, you want big heavyweight knockout battles, and he's kind of perfect for that.
Back in just a moment with more on this card. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We are running down the UFC 145 pay-per-view. John Jones, Rashad Evans. Jones, he took him to school here in this particular fight. Rashad, I will say this. Rashad is a great fighter. But John Jones, yet another championship title defense, yet another fight where he took a world-class fighter and kind of walked right through him in some ways. You know, he didn't finish him. He went five rounds. He was working to finish the whole time, too. It wasn't just like he was trying to eke out a decision. He was trying to finish this guy, and he couldn't finish Rashad. So Rashad deserves credit for that, but pretty scary performance in a lot of ways, watching Jones just go in there and never really be in any danger whatsoever and just beat this dude up.
I tell you, really, a ballsy move at the end, too, with him pulling guard when they smack the blocks together to say 10 seconds left in the fifth and final round, which, by the way, that was a round where, you know, Rashad Evans had to come out swinging for the fences, and he just couldn't do it, and I think probably mentally at that point, too. I mean, he knew he had to throw head kicks, and he had to keep throwing these, you know, huge bombs, and he never, you know, really pressed the action to get in to do it, where, you know, I think it just got to be at the end there where it was like, well, at least I got to say I took John Jones five rounds. And I was the first guy with the ability to do that at that point because he knew it was a fruitless proposition. But he pulled, Jones pulled guard on Evans at the end with 10 seconds left. And, you know, obviously it was to do something and obviously stifle him if he was going to throw that big windmill punch and try to get it in on him. But, you know, that was just a very creative but a very ballsy move as well for John Jones.
I don't know if I'd use the term ballsy. It's wacky.
Well, I mean, look, he could have just backed up and you know, gotten out of it. Say he goes and pulls guard and just, you know, it's one of those things where Rashad Evans comes over with an elbow, hits him right on the point of the chin. you know, so you go, Jesus, you know, he didn't have to do something like that. But, you know, with John Jones, the way it's going for him right now, until he gets caught with something, you're not going to believe it won't affect him.
Yeah, when it first happened, I was like, what in the hell was that? But then when I thought about it, it was like, okay. Because he was looking at the clock for like the last 30 seconds. He was waiting for 10 seconds to pull this off. And when the 10 second block hit, he jumped up and pulled guard in exactly as everybody was thinking. Last 10 seconds was the last 10 seconds when Rashad was just going to go nuts. He was just going to go nuts. He was going to start swinging and throw it all out there, because who cares? You may as well try and get the knockout. And by pulling guard with 10 seconds left, I think that, you know, first off, you're going to have that brief moment where Rashad is like, what the hell just happened? So you're going to kill some time there. And then, you know, Jones is so long that he could tie the guy up and control him for a good 10 seconds. Maybe if he pulled guard with a minute left or something like that, then it'd be kind of like, well, you know, maybe you're going to be in a little bit of danger. But all he did was kill the last 10 seconds of offense of Rashad Evans. It was actually a brilliant move, but you know, I don't know whether it paid off or not. It was kind of just, as you noted, Jones could have just backed up and extended his arm, and, you know, Rashad couldn't have gotten inside. It was kind of funny watching, because he would do that. He would put both arms out, and Rashad decided, I'm going to put both my arms out, and we're going to play patty cake here. And, of course, every time he did that, he got elbowed right in the face. And finally, when he got back to the corner, his corner was just telling him, stop touching hands! And he did it at that point, but it was too late.
Professional wrestling style, you know, going for the battle of the test of strength with locking hands. And one thing I'm surprised Evans actually didn't do was just not the pro wrestling style boot in the gut during something like that that a heel would do to a face, but I am actually surprised that he didn't actually try to throw any front kicks with, you know, as good as his kicks are, and obviously with John Jones, he did throw a couple, but John Jones actually had the far more notable head kicks in the fight. I'm surprised Evans, to try to close the gap, didn't actually, in one of those, try to at least throw something up at Jones's face.
Michael McDonald and Miguel Torres, as you noted, Torres just, I don't want to say he's got nothing left, but after he lost to Brian Bowles, and then he started switching up his training camp and switching up his style and becoming more of a technical stand-up fighter as opposed to just going in there and going nuts, he has never been the same. And
you have to like this a little bit with his boxing style that you love so much.
What about that?
I thought you absolutely hated his boxing style and the pity-pat punch approach and throwing a lot of punches out there.
Miguel Torres?
Yeah.
I think you're thinking of Diaz.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know you don't like that about Diaz too. At least he's harder hitting and more effective with it. But that you've had that beef with Torres before.
Maybe
too.
I did in the past. It's very possible. The new Torres, not the old Torres.
WBC Torres was a little more fun than this, because he had confidence, and you know, after those losses, like you said, it's just not the same. I mean, the fact that he went through a decision with Nick Pace last time around was bad enough, and I'm just, you know, they said it during the fight, and it is funny to think about the fact that Michael McDonald was 9 years old when Miguel Torres started. That's actually a situation with John Jones, too. When he fights Henderson, when Henderson had his first fight, John Jones was a month away from turning 10. And, you know, it's, you know, Torres is, you know, still, he's only 31 years old, but he's an older 30, you know, and really at this point, an old 31. Because mentally, obviously, something as great as McDonald is, it still surprised me that this happened with Torres.
Yeah, McDonald was 3 when UFC 1 occurred.
3
years old, everybody. That's
We're
right.
Getting old.
They mentioned that he was a guy that he didn't like have a background in anything in particular. It wasn't like he had a background in karate, or he had a background in wrestling, or he had a background. He just grew up and he trained mixed martial arts. That was his discipline. He trained mixed martial arts from day one, and kind of paid off for him. Although I don't know if his mixed martial arts gym. Well, let's move on here. We had Mark Hominick and Eddie Yagan. Who did you think won this fight? I thought it was Yagan 2-1. I gave Yagan the first two and Hominick the third. But I was watching with a crowd of people that they They thought that Hominick won. They thought that even though he was rocked in the first and second round, they thought he did enough during the non-rocked portion to win both rounds. I didn't see it that way. How did you see this fight?
If it was a technique competition where you were being judged on that, okay, maybe. I was surprised to hear the swell of people that thought Hominick won this, because I thought, like you, that Yagan won the first two rounds. And, I mean, you know, look at the damage that was done. And obviously Yagan looked rough in the third round. But, I mean, it just, those tight, compact, I mean, you know, windmill, almost telegraph punches. Again, I don't know what you had first-hand knowledge of people watching with you, but I got the impression, and I hate to say this, but almost for, I got the feeling that it was like, I know everyone wants Mark Hominick to do well, and obviously the Tompkins thing was terrible, and he comes out and gets, you know, laid out by Sung Jung in 7 seconds in his last fight, and I almost, just because I couldn't see it, I didn't think this was controversial at all. I thought it was so clear-cut that, yeah, I almost got the feeling that it's like, I know, you know, a lot of good things for Mark Hominick because of the situation in the card that he's been dealt recently, but he just flat didn't win that fight.
We had Mark Bocek and John Lesio. Bocek won. Fight wasn't much.
No, it wasn't, and Bocek won. And it wasn't, I guess, the most five-star way to start off a pay-per-view or anything, but it also wasn't, even though Bocek won, you know, clearly, it wasn't a situation where it was like this was an awful way to open the show or anything like that. I did still think it was a good fight, so no complaints out of me.
Matt Brown and Stephen Thompson. I could have given this fight of the night, and it was kind of funny because Matt Brown, to me, God bless the guy, he's not a very good technical fighter, but he's a tough guy. So what happened was Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, who is a karate whirlwind, I guess is the best way to describe him. He is an awesome stand-up fighter. And he went in there and he, on the feet, was beating the crap out of Matt Brown. But Matt Brown is tough and he just kept coming. And then Matt Brown would go for these takedowns and they were the most god-awful attempts at takedowns you ever saw. You know, he'd put his head down and run from 10 feet away to get the double leg, and lo and behold, he got it! Every takedown he went for, he got. No matter how good or bad it was. He could have vigorously blown in the direction of Stephen Thompson, and he would have tipped over. And then ended up on the ground, and Stephen Thompson knew just enough to not be submitted, and Matt Brown knew just enough to put him in danger but not actually submit him. So you actually ended up having a great fight! And Matt Brown ended up getting the victory, 30-27, 30-27, and 29-27. Those were the official scores. And it was a fun battle. Not exactly like a textbook match in any way, but a fun battle.
Oh, yeah, the crucifix and the, you know, the triangle and the elbows. It was one of those sloppy good ones that, you know, it was the last one, or second to last one they aired. They aired the Travis Brown-Chad Griggs fight, which they also aired on the pay-per-view as well. That actually closed the show on FX. But, you know, after the first two fights going to decision, this one going to decision was at least fun throughout.
Actually, a lot of decisions on the undercard, including ones we didn't see. Dave, who was there prior to the Matt Brown fight, had written, "Will somebody please finish a fight?" Apparently, the Maximo Blanco fight that opened the show was hideous. It was Maximo Blanco and Marcus Brimage. And Dana White sarcastically tweeted, "I was so excited about this fight, I almost died." And, yeah.
Not the group at the press conference that actually thought that was the case.
I know, I heard that. I heard that.
Yes. And his whole plan, I think he brought Dana coffee, a bunch of coffee from Puerto Rico, and a shirt that said something along the lines of, "Please bring the UFC back to Puerto Rico." So Dana, I forgot, gave the coffee to someone because he doesn't drink coffee, which, thank God for that.
Dana White doesn't drink coffee?
I don't think he needs to drink coffee.
He drinks some energy drinks. All right, we'll be back in just a moment, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. For the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates. We got radio shows. My God, we've got radio shows. We do shows virtually every single day. We were up last night. Dave was up at 4 o'clock a.m. Doing a radio show, talking UFC 145. He was there in Atlanta for the show. We did one the night before as well from Atlanta. And did another one tomorrow night following Raw. And Tuesday. We'll talk about the Alistair Overeem situation here in a moment. But basically, if you like this show, you are missing out. We do shows all the time. And not only do we do shows all the time, meaning pretty much every single day and often several times per day, but if you sign up $10.99 per month as a member, you not only get all of these brand new shows that we've been talking about here, but you can dip into the archives and we have tens of thousands of hours of audio. Every single show that we have ever recorded since 2005 is available in the archives right now. All searchable. We got interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling. Bruno Sammartino, Bret Hart, Steve Austin, Ric Flair. List goes on and on. We have coverage of virtually every big show that has taken place since 2005. Not only do you get the radio shows, you get the Wrestling Observer newsletter, Figure Four Weekly, all of our members-only content. It's only $10.99 a month. And again, since you get everything, if you sign up right now for $10.99, it's essentially as if you signed up in 2005, because everything that you could have gotten since 2005, you can have right now when you sign up. So check it out. Go to WrestlingObserver.com. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page. We have a listing of our latest three free radio shows. You can download them. Check out the audio quality. It's identical, if not better, than what you're listening to right now on Sirius Satellite Radio and Sports Byline USA. Studio is here in my house. So check them out if you like what you hear. Well, sign up and listen to wrestling and mixed martial arts audio every single day, all day long if you wanted to, because it's going to take you a while to go through tens of thousands of hours of audio. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. Mike, this Tuesday is the Alistair Overeem hearing. He's in trouble. High testosterone. Before the hearing even takes place, they have already removed him from his championship match at UFC 146. It is now Junior Dos Santos versus Frank Mir for the UFC heavyweight title. And let's start with Mir. Your thoughts on that fight as a replacement?
Well, it was the one that made the most sense for them to make, with the possibilities of, you know, who they were going to put in there. Again, to me, that was a little bit of a no-brainer. Obviously, there were a good deal of people that were rooting for Mark Hunt and for the, you know, the pride point of view and the old school point of view of the fun slobber knocker and the fun of seeing Mark Hunt in that fight. Yeah, it was kind of wacky to talk about. Same thing with Rory Nelson, but Nelson got waxed in his last fight. So, you know, it made the most sense for Frank Mir to go into that fight. And, you know, the dominoes that it sets up for 146, I don't think is that big of a deal. Just Dave reported that Mark Hunt and Struve are still going to fight, and Gonzaga and Del Rosario are still going to fight as well. So there's the possibility of Travis Brown possibly slipping into that fight because, you know, his, you know, quick fashion win. I guess Ben Rothwell is the same way, where both of them would be ready. They at least said they would be ready to go into it, but this was a no-brainer decision for the UFC to make, even without the rumors of what the explanation of Overeem is going to be come Tuesday now that it's changed. It didn't really matter. I think any money that the UFC would sacrifice and the possibility of going into a breach of contract situation with Overeem's lawyers were worth the risk in saying that, hey, look, if he gets cleared, we did have his contract to say he was going to fight Junior Dos Santos and he was going to get a title fight. But they very simply, they just come out and say, obviously they would be taken to task by Overeem's lawyers, but, you know, they had a deadline to meet as far as making a fight goes. And you have the rate of the testosterone that he was, you know, knowing he was going to get tested, and you have all that coming from the UFC side. Even without whatever Overeem's excuses coming up with now, they made the right decision, and they made the decision they were going to have to make whether they got pressed on a breach of contract from Overeem or not.
Well, Dana White's explanation for pulling him is, first off, he's not confident about what's going to happen on Tuesday. And second off, he explained that we're running out of time. We have got to get information out about this pay-per-view now. If we don't, we're not going to get onto different cable systems in terms of the promotional ads and that sort of thing. He said he was just out of time. Overeem has not really spoken publicly on this situation, obviously. According to sources, number of them, he was planning his team to use the old testosterone replacement therapy line. Now, as I had talked about a couple days ago on another show, there's the Spike MMA Uncensored Live program. And on that program, a little while ago, they promised an exclusive interview. Alistair Overeem speaks for the first time. And I'm like, man, I got to watch this. As it turns out, Alistair Overeem spoke nothing on this subject. They actually, after teasing the interview all day long, they open up the show saying, Alistair's not going to speak on any of this. He's just going to speak about fighting. So there was nothing to the interview. But prior to the interview, they showed the footage of Overeem in the weight room. And he's absolutely enormous, and he's throwing around weights. And I'm sitting there going, really, this fella has low testosterone. Please, tell me more. So, if you recall, back in November, December, when he was flagged for a surprise drug test, and it took him 27 days to supply a proper sample. 27 days, everybody. You will recall that what happened was he was asked to take the test. 3 hours later, he was on a flight. That actually probably was a coincidence. But at the same time, once he did take the test after arriving in Holland, he took the wrong test. He took a blood test as opposed to a urine test. The problem with Overeem's claim of needing testosterone replacement therapy was the blood test result came back and said that his testosterone levels were normal. Therefore, if he was going to plead low testosterone, well, something would have had to have happened between the date of that test receipt, which was December, and today, or his drug test failure, which was in April. So, what could have possibly happened in those 3 months that plummeted him to levels of testosterone so low that he needs testosterone replacement therapy? So apparently, they figured out, oops, well, that's going to be a problem. So now, reportedly, the new claim is going to be that, in fact, it's not a need for testosterone replacement therapy, but rather, Alistair Overeem has an issue with erectile dysfunction. And he took a pill to assist him with these issues, a Viagra-like pill, and that shot his testosterone levels through the roof. That's going to be the new claim. So, you can understand why Dana is thinking, this may not fly in the face of the commission on Tuesday. And of course, if Overeem is denied his license, which at this point, virtually everybody is expecting, well, he won't be able to fight for a year. So, that is the latest on Alistair, and I don't know what to make of this new excuse. I think it would have just been easier to, I don't know what would have been easier, but this seems like the hard way.
Because it was erectile dysfunction?
No pun intended.
I thought the whole thing behind any of those ED pills is the fact that you can't get it up. That would have something to do with low testosterone, but okay, so if one's got to do with that, how about we just, if Overeem is claiming all of these things, how about maybe then if he's making these claims for why things are happening, he's got no problem doing it publicly here, he goes to the square root of why exactly is this happening then? Were you born this way? I mean, did you have these problems in K-1? I mean, what would be the reasoning why? Because I just call me crazy what the layman would say, looking at him and looking at how he's looked throughout his career, and maybe all of these things may all be the case, but what's the reason behind it all?
Well, my question is, how are you having these problems if your testosterone is normal? Seems odd.
Yes. And, you know, all of this, but the thing is, you know what, Brian, honestly, we saw Chael Sonnen's, you know, remember the doctor that used to be with Scott Steiner and Buff Bagwell in WCW? I believe he was the one that represented Chael Sonnen at that meeting with the commission, which followed Josh Barnett having a meeting with the commission saying, oh, wait, I wasn't ready to answer questions. I just thought we were here to hang out. And the fact that all of this nonsense, and we got the Nick Diaz situation, all of this stuff, the fact that any of this is happening, yes, we know it's why it's happening, and we know what the fighters, you know, at least, you know, we can call BS on a lot of it legitimately. But with that said, as long as they're able to get over on these commissions and to have this kind of doublespeak and nonsense and garbage where nothing really makes sense, but we'll play this shell game and we'll come up with these results and maybe I'll get a pass. I mean, look at the Lesnar fight. I'm so surprised Lesnar's people haven't come out to try to get that overturned just for the hell of it, whether it gets overturned or not, to go through the process of at least trying for it. Because of all this stuff, how do you really blame the fighter? And I know you and Dave on the show last night talked about the fact that the UFC threw out there, well, maybe we could have a WADA-style, you know, company come in and we'll pay them to have some random tests on guys once in a while. That's the only thing that they're going to be able to do. And even then, it's still going to be somewhat of an IQ test, but at least it would be something they can do because it's great. It was great for Dana to say we rely on the commissions and to throw it out there like that. And he's right. And for a lot of ways, I've been completely behind how he's done that in that, you know, hey, I'm running a business here. This is for them to check. But they're just so incompetent and so bad and so weak all the way across the board. And no offense to Nevada is good. But after the California hearings and everything else that's happened, this is really bad and really embarrassing, and they have to do something just for their own good because these commissions are – the fact that Overeem is going to have a meeting on Tuesday instead of just having the commission come out and say, you know, we already went through this. We granted you an exemption license and yada, yada, yada. The fact that, yeah, he didn't take the test and was on a plane and all that stuff, they shouldn't even be having a meeting with him. They should just be suspending him and getting it over with.
Yeah, I think that at some point there's going to be some additional testing. I think UFC will be paying some sort of outside organization to come in and randomly test our guys. I mean, they have to at this point. They have to. I know that Dana has said, you know, I don't have time, blah, blah, blah. You don't have to do this. Someone else can do this. And the issue is that testing at this point does work because guys are getting popped. So I just feel like if they have somebody from the outside come in and do this, at the beginning, a lot of guys are going to get popped, and they're not going to be happy about this. But hopefully, some guys start to learn some lessons about this, that this is the real deal, that they're getting tested, and they're either going to have to find other ways around this, which, of course, in sports, all athletes are going to attempt to do if they're on something, or get off whatever they're on, and maybe the playing field will be a little more even. Who knows? But the fact of the matter is, if they don't do anything, this is going to continue to happen. They're still going to get guys popped. Guys are still going to feel they're going to get around the system because there isn't random testing. And I think it's just better for everybody involved to randomly test your guys. And you know, we'll talk about this more after the break because WWE does this, and there are still people very critical of the policy. So kind of have to talk about how to make it work and not make it work. That's coming up after the break, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We were talking about UFC hiring an outside organization to do drug testing before the break. I think it's very important. I think it tells the public that you want to do something about this problem. And more so, if you really do, if you're Dana White and you really do want to do something about this problem, then I think that you should do this because it is a way to help remedy what is becoming an out-of-control situation, I believe. And I think Dana White has noted many times, I don't want these guys on anything. And You know, when people are critical of Dana, saying, you know, Dana doesn't care, blah, blah, blah. I mean, whether or not he cares about his athletes actually being on drugs, reality of the matter is he does care about the fact that his guys being on drugs and getting popped is killing his main events. And I'm sure that really does drive him nuts. So if this is really bothering him, and if it's really bothering UFC, and if these guys want to, for whatever reason, whether it's just that they want to clean up the sport, whether they actually care about the health of the fighters, whether they're mostly concerned about their main events falling apart, whatever the reason, if you want to handle the situation, you need to let the guys know, this is real. This is real. You can be tested at any time, on any day. The guy is going to come to your house, he's going to come to your gym, he is going to have a cup, he's going to observe you peeing in the cup. You're not going to be able to accidentally take the wrong test. You're going to be tested at any time, in competition, out of competition, at any time. At that point, maybe things are going to start to turn around a little bit. And as noted, you're going to have to accept the fact that early on, a lot of guys are going to get popped. But if you make the penalties stiff enough, you know, if these guys are going to be suspended for 6 months on a first offense, a year on a second, 2 years on a third, or whatever your penalties are, once people realize this is real, then you have the opportunity of affecting change. So I think it's a good idea. I think they've got to do it. I think there's no way around the fact that they've got to do it. Even if a bunch of guys fail, at least the public is going to know UFC is trying to do something about this, and that's important. We're going to get Mike's thoughts on this after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday afternoon. 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, as we are every week. And Mike, quick segment here. Any thoughts on what we were discussing in hour one, the drug testing situation in UFC and UFC's discussions about possibly performing this themselves?
Yeah, even if you look at what WWE did and say they're doing it for all the wrong reasons and they don't test certain guys, doesn't matter. It was the perception of doing it. And I'm not saying that the UFC should do it just purely for perception. They should be doing it to even the playing field and to make sure that, you know, that it's a dangerous sport as it is, that you're not causing any more possibilities of damage, much less damage to your sport. But, you know, again, they're not legal in New York. That's kind of been forgotten about. You know, this was going to be, the last couple of years, a big push to get MMA in New York, and that's kind of bottomed out for a little while right now, although there are still rallies and things like that. They're not in Melbourne. They have problems in Germany. They have problems in British Columbia. You know, it's not universally accepted, even though that they're on Fox now and they're bigger than they've ever been. So for that perception alone and something that people can bring up and cram in their face, they have to do it. Plus, just for the sporting point of view and just to take away the headaches that you talked about of them losing main events and things like that, they do have to do something, and they do have to either spend money on their own, fund Nevada, fund the other commissions to, you know, push them into doing more out-of-competition testing, which they have the ability to do, but they always complain that they don't have the money to do it, with the exception, really, of Nevada and California. So, again, they've got to do it to level the playing field. They've got to do it for perception, and they've got to do it just to clear their own heads of the possibilities of things like this with Overeem and Diaz and Mark Horton and things like that from continuing on and happening.
We will be back in just a moment. Pro wrestling coming up in hour two. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. A lot of stuff to talk about today. I just want to make a quick mention, since we've been talking about Alistair Overeem. The hearing will be streaming live on Tuesday. Check out WrestlingObserver.com for more. I'm sure we will have a link up on Tuesday morning for that, as well as information on the Brazil show, the Anderson Silva Chael Sonnen show, scheduled to take place in Brazil, looking at this point like it's not going to be taking place. Logistical issues with Brazil. As a result, Chael Sonnen and Anderson Silva may be taking place on July 7th at the UFC show in Las Vegas. That is not certain. It is interesting, the fact that they are holding a press conference in Brazil on Tuesday. Kind of odd if the plan is to pull out of Brazil to hold the press conference announcing that in Brazil. But I guess we shall see what they do. Let's talk about lockdown. Switching gears here. Mike, the pay-per-view this past Sunday night, James Storm did not, in fact, win the TNA Heavyweight Championship. What were your thoughts on the booking of the cage match with Bobby Roode at lockdown?
You know, I thought the ending with, you know, Hebner giving him the beer bottle and everything was a little wonky, but the match itself I thought it was good, and I was fine with Storm not winning the title if it wasn't for the build up with this whole thing being that he's going to go to his hometown and win the title. Again, I would have booked it differently up to this, but the fact that Storm didn't win, they should be getting a lot more mileage out of Roode and Storm as it is. It doesn't look like that's going to be the case, because now James Storm came on Impact and he's out there and he's really depressed and he doesn't know what to do, and he dropped the mic and he walked away. And it's looking like obviously after Impact that we're going to get RVD and Bobby Roode, and you had Kennedy in that mix. You had Jeff Hardy looking extra Jeff Hardy in that mix. And it'll be interesting to see where they go. I guess this is a ploy to build more sympathy for James Storm. I don't think he needed it. But again, if the build-up to the thing would have been different, I wouldn't have had a problem with James Storm losing. But considering, I don't know what that crowd was there for, but they were at least relatively hyped up for that match, where it just made it, I guess, extra disappointing to them that he didn't win, and then him coming out schlubbing it on Monday, I thought was bizarre. Almost as bizarre as, the second guy in TNA to get his hair cut and not in a hair match, but okay, like Bobby Roode did. But again, it wasn't the result I had a problem with. It's just the lead-up and now the lead out of it.
There's a big problem with pro wrestling today, actually for about the past 10 years or so. To me, fans like surprises here and there. It's fun when you expect something to happen and then it doesn't. Sometimes. But not all the time. And the key to pro wrestling, in a lot of ways, the success of pro wrestling, I know some people are going to say that this is not true, but this is true. The success of pro wrestling is built upon the fact that it's fake, in the sense that you can do whatever you want because you determine who wins and who loses. So the secret to professional wrestling is to largely tell people what they want and then give it to them. You tell people they want to see two men fight and then you give them the match. Or, in other cases, such as this one, you tell people that they want to see James Storm, the babyface, win his title in his hometown, and then you give it to them. There's a big problem nowadays with building up a big match and building up an expected outcome, and concluding that since everybody knows what's going to happen, you've got to give them something different. That is not good pro wrestling. If you're concerned about people knowing what's going to happen all the time, then why not just book pro wrestling based on coin flips backstage? Then you're booking it like mixed martial arts, where you never know who's going to win on any given day. Why not just in every match flip a coin, and the winner of the coin flip ends up winning the match? And if you've got an outcome that you want, instead of doing what pro wrestling is designed to do, which is allow you to decide who wins and do things that are the best for business, just flip a coin. Why not do that instead of building something up and then deliberately giving the fans something different? I don't think that the babyface should always win. Nor do I think that the babyface should always win in his hometown. But I do believe that 95% of the time, in fact, the babyface should win in his hometown. Back in the day, you could get a great amount of heat by beating a guy in his hometown. But that was usually because the guy lost in his hometown, and then the next week or the next month, he returned to a match in his hometown and was victorious. Nowadays, if Daniel Bryan is having a match in Seattle, which is not his hometown, but it's close enough, he's considered a local. If Daniel Bryan, or CM Punk is an even better example, because CM Punk is defending his title at Extreme Rules against Chris Jericho in his hometown. If CM Punk loses in his hometown, CM Punk is not getting his win back in his hometown, most likely. If Chris Jericho beats CM Punk, and CM Punk is scheduled to win the title in 2 months, he's not winning it in Chicago. He's winning it somewhere else. The days of beating the guy in his hometown because he's just going to come back and get his victory in his hometown a week or a month later, those days are over. So to me, you should always put the guy over in his hometown in 95% of the cases nowadays. With James Storm not winning the title here, the issue to me is that there have now been the two biggest TNA pay-per-views of the year. The biggest pay-per-view of the year, supposedly, Bound for Glory, and the second biggest pay-per-view of the year, Lockdown. In both cases, you created a storyline that was designed to build towards a title change at that show. Bobby Roode had the Bound for Glory series, or whatever it was called. You built the guy up big, you built it up, and you essentially told the fans that the title change is happening at Bound for Glory. If you spend your money, you are going to watch history. You are going to watch Bobby Roode win the title from Kurt Angle, the ascension of a new star. In the case of Lockdown, it was the same thing. For 4 months, they built up this storyline. James Storm is finding his way back. He's going to win his championship back in his hometown. You essentially told fans, if you buy this pay-per-view, you are going to see the culmination of this story. You are going to see James Storm win the championship in his hometown in front of all of his friends and family over the dastardly heel Bobby Roode. In both cases, on the two biggest shows of the year, after essentially telling fans, this is what will happen if you spend your money, that was not what happened. And in fact, in both cases, it was supposed to happen, but they changed their minds at the last minute and switched the finish. So to me, yes, every now and then you can build up a finish and go in a different direction. Every now and then. But when you do this on all of your big shows, when you do this on the two biggest shows of the year after the two longest builds that you have done in God knows how long, all you do is tell the fans, don't buy our shows anymore. Don't buy the next one. The best part was, after James Storm didn't win, the idea is apparently that they're going to stretch this out to Bound for Glory this coming fall. So, essentially, you told fans twice now that when we do a long build towards a title change, we're not going to give it to you. And now their brilliant idea is, let's do another long build to the biggest show of the year, and maybe this time the people will buy, or maybe we'll convince the people to buy. You've already told the people, not just fool me once, fool me twice. So that is why I believe that James Storm absolutely should have won the title on this show. And when we come back from the break, we'll get Mike's thoughts on this. I have ranted for too long. Wrestling Observer Live, everybody, here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet here at WrestlingObserver.com. We were talking about the James Storm non-title win, meaning he didn't win the title at the Lockdown pay-per-view. I spent a lot of time ranting about that in the previous segment. Mike, what are your thoughts on their decision to not put the title on Storm?
No, I mean, as you said, again, if this whole thing would have been built up a lot differently, if it would have taken a lot more, you know, of a different path right off the bat, and you didn't get all that bastardization that happened, again, almost right off the bat, when it was last October, I think it was, that this whole mix, you know, began to happen, and then, you know, Rude's the one that makes the turn and blah, 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 that's happened along the way. Again, if the lead into this was different, then I wouldn't have had a problem with the result of beating him in his hometown, because people would have think, you know, people would have had more faith in it. But again, the TNA, WWE is the same way. It's why they continue to get a 3.1. No matter who it is, you could put Jesus Christ. Go ahead. They actually call God back out and put him on. It doesn't matter. It's going to get a 3.1. Same thing with TNA. You know, this pay-per-view probably should have done better than, you know, plenty of other ones, and I don't know what that means, say 15,000 buys, but at the end of the day, 1.2 million people still watch this thing every single week, and you are going to be happy about, let's just say it was 25,000 buys. Why should you be happy about that when you have the same million people who are loyal enough to watch every week, but you've given them no reason to buy the pay-per-view? They've had pay-per-views that basically have just led into Impact. How many times has that happened? How many times has that happened with the world title on the line? It's they just, and again, I know that there's a relatively new regime in charge right now, but it's hitting the reset button again on this. And like you're saying, they want to string this out till fall. Well, how can you make it? I mean, you're going to have to be real careful along the way and be used to the fact that people are not going to be fully invested, and they're going to turn their noses up at it, and they're going to be cynical about it, whether you like it or not, because you've got no faith, and it's going to take time to rebuild that faith, and it's not easy, but you need consistency. That's being the biggest key in entertaining writing and entertaining programming and guys doing the right work. And it's amazing with the roster they have, even now, when you look at the guys that were standing out there on Thursday, you just go, you know, again, they're hitting a reset button. Now they want to push it off till fall. They're doing, to me, one of the weaker things they could do with James Storm, which is have him question himself. The badass, the beer, the Tennessee cowboy, the whole nine yards, and he, man, you know, my daughter is upset because daddy wears the belt, and I just don't know what to say, and I'm going to hug Devon on the way out, and I'm going to throw this mic down, and what next? And the worst part is, with Rude and Storm, you had every reason to believe that a longtime TNA fan would buy into these guys, and I don't think this is the way, again, even though they may like James Storm, I don't think they're going to feel sympathy over him for this, and I don't think, but again, who knows? It's the same thing, again, week after week after week. This week it was a 0.96 or whatever it was, but it's just nothing pops there. And again, I will be 3 months from now, 4 months from now, if they can actually pull off, you know, keeping a storyline coherent and together and making me buy it, I'll believe it then. But as of now, I don't believe it, and frankly, nobody else does either, even their own fan base.
I just think about it like, it's probably a wacky analogy, but I don't care. I just think about it like, let's say it's a hot summer day, and you got some friends coming over, and the first friend, you open the door, and they're eating ice cream. And you're like, God dang, that ice cream looks good. And then your next friend comes over, and you open up the door, and they're eating ice cream. And you're like, oh my God, could I ever use some ice cream right now? And you're telling them this, and they're like, yeah, this is some great ice cream. This ice cream tastes so good. Wouldn't you love some ice cream? And then the door opens again, and someone comes in, and they've got ice cream. And now you're salivating, and everybody's got ice cream, and they're all eating ice cream in front of you. And finally they go, you know what, Brian? Let's go for a ride. We're going to take you somewhere special. And you jump in the car, and they drive down the street, and they take you, and they park in front of the ice cream place, and you're all excited, and then they drag you into the shoe store. I want ice cream. Horrible analogy, but this is what they do in pro wrestling. They tell you what you want That's the whole key here. They design all of their storylines and their matches. They make you want to see a specific match. They make you want to see a specific outcome. And the idea is you want to see this outcome so bad that you will pay to see the outcome. Oftentimes, it's okay. In fact, it's not even just okay. Many times, people should know what is going to happen. They should know that if they pay their money, they're going to get the payoff. They should know that if they pay their money, they're not going to get screwed. And unfortunately, things are so broken in wrestling today that nobody ever knows what they're going to get. And to me, that's actually a problem. That's not a positive. That is a negative. That is a negative when you buy a TNA pay-per-view and you don't know what's going to happen. Sometimes you should know. Sometimes you should know that, you know what? I've been watching this dang show for 4 months now, and I'm ready to see James Storm beat Bobby Roode. You should have some confidence that when you buy Lockdown, that's what you're going to get. And as we have seen by the declining buy rates, nobody has any faith in anything. Nobody ever believes anything is going to pay off for them. And so we've got a broken system today where the magic of pro wrestling, all of the reasons that pro wrestling can be a success are being stripped from pro wrestling. And of all things, mixed martial arts, which doesn't have any of these benefits of pro wrestling, they're actually doing fine because oftentimes they'll at least deliver with the big fight. You may not necessarily get the outcome that you desire, but at least you're not going to feel like you were screwed. That, to me, is the key. If you really wanted Rashad Evans to win, if you really badly wanted Rashad Evans to win, when John Jones beat him, that's not UFC's fault. You don't feel like you were screwed. You're just disappointed. But everybody knows what pro wrestling is. So, to me, if you're a pro wrestling promotion and you essentially promise a finish and then you give a different finish, the fans aren't upset at Bobby Roode. They're not upset at the referee. They feel that you, the promotion, screwed them. So I just feel build up stuff and then give the people what they want to see. That is the key to pro wrestling. You make people want to see something and then you give it to them. And we don't see any of that nowadays. Which brings me, by the way. Oh, go ahead. I was going to say,
it's just one of the more comedic parts about it, because you mentioned about MMA, but it's the whole thing with real sports, and we talked about a little bit last week of why sports, live sports properties are so important to these networks, is because it's the one thing you don't want to DVR, because, damn it, you got to see it live. And the funniest thing is, if they wanted to foster an environment of, you never know what's going to happen on our show, you take it back to how pro wrestling was, which was an imitation of sport and sporting type things, where you don't know who's going to win, and who knows, okay, if the Kerry Von Erich's coming in, but if he's not the champion, whoever the champion is going to fail. You know, the thing that they want to steer away from, and they hate so much, and they hate being so much, is the whole reason that it works. And all those things with theme pay-per-views, I mean, you can run the gamut for things in WWE and TNA, of what the problem is and why there's an issue. And it comes right back to, as you were saying, the professional wrestling stuff is still, it can still work. It still works.
Which brings us to the Brock Lesnar, John Cena match at Extreme Rules, which is coming up next weekend. I think that, to me, Brock Lesnar needs to win this match rather decisively. But I have this feeling that in 2 weeks, we're going to be on this show talking about, can you believe that John Cena beat Brock Lesnar in his first pay-per-view match? What are your thoughts?
No. I refuse to believe that.
Mike, you done better start believing, my man.
I know. I've been burned on this before, but it's unfathomable to me that Brock Lesnar would let himself, he's not losing to John Cena. If that's the case, then you know what? Brock Lesnar's got to go. I mean, there's no point. Cancel the contract, you know, give him some extra money and get out. Because unless he goes through John Cena like a hot knife through butter, and again, I know how they think of John Cena, but again, there's ways to retool John Cena. This is not going to kill him getting blown out this fast. Look, Brock Lesnar should have Alberto Del Rio come to him in October and say, well, at least I had an MMA fight, when Brock brags about all the guys he's been through. Brock Lesnar should be the guy they can't control. and he breaks away from Big Johnny, and he's just on a rampage, and he's too big for everything, which leads into whatever his match is going to be at WrestleMania next year. Rock, I don't care who it is, but if he goes out and loses to John Cena, what is the point? Look at the good commercials that they did on, or the spots that they did, the vignettes on Monday that they ran. They also ran them on SmackDown. What is the point then of him being there if he doesn't blast through Cena? It doesn't make any sense.
I'm not saying that I know anything for sure, actually, but I know that there are people in WWE that firmly believe that John Cena is going to beat Brock Lesnar, and they don't know. Let me stress that. And in fact, anybody who says they know at this point, whatever the decision is today, they may change it by next week. That's just the reality of the situation. But I do know there are people there that believe that John Cena is going to win the match. They believe that Brock Lesnar has destroyed him week after week, and John Cena is going to prove he's a tough guy and beat Brock Lesnar at Extreme Rules. And I think that would be an absolutely idiotic idea. Absolutely idiotic. But when you look at how they booked John Cena, and when you look at how they booked John Cena for the last few weeks, and you look at the loss he had to Lord Tensai in an Extreme Rules match, which the entire point of that match was to show you that, hey, fan, John Cena in an Extreme Rules match is in deep trouble. And then, of course, he valiantly comes back and beats the odds and wins at the pay-per-view. That is traditional, typical WWE booking. He lost to The Rock at the last pay-per-view. Everything points to him winning. But do I think he should win? No. We'll talk about this more after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 20 minutes. Pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, every Sunday afternoon, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Of course, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com for more news and information, as well as subscription packages. $10.99 a month is all you need for daily radio programming. Not going to do a big plug here. All I will say is head over to WrestlingObserver.com, scroll down the right-hand side of the page, click on the latest 3 free radio shows or MP3s, download them, listen to them, and if you like what you hear, sign up. You will not regret it. Tens of thousands of hours of audio at your fingertips and new shows every single day. So don't miss out. We're talking Extreme Rules and the Brock Lesnar-John Cena match. We have somewhat of a card for the show. Mike, do you know that tomorrow's a 3-hour Raw?
Yeah, I actually realized that when I was... thank God for Universal HD. I don't know if anybody else has got this channel, but have it with Comcast. At least it's one benefit I get with having Comcast service. But if it wasn't for them replaying Raw and SmackDown nonstop on Saturdays, I probably would be out of luck for this show. Because the way Raw has been on Mondays, by the time it gets to the end of the week, I've completely forgotten about it. And Friday night is, not a night I think about hanging out and watching SmackDown. So if I forget to DVR it, or if Hell's Kitchen is on and I'm actually DVRing that instead, because, yes, that would actually take precedence over SmackDown. Thank God it's on Saturdays for me to check out and finally watch. But, yes, during a commercial on that SmackDown, I did realize that Raw was 3 hours.
This was originally scheduled to be a draft show, and then they changed their minds. Shocking, I know.
Wait. Are you sure about this? Because I've heard rumors about Alberto Del Rio being traded for future considerations.
Yes, he has been drafted without a draft to SmackDown, as has Drew McIntyre and a couple of others as well, who I don't think anybody even knew were on Raw in the first place. But anyway, the draft is now tentatively scheduled for June 11th in Hartford, Connecticut, and... since the draft is no longer tomorrow, now there's no theme for the show. There's no reason for it being 3 hours. It's just randomly 3 hours. And I suspect the first hour rating is going to be, I will go as far as to say the low twos. I would say, I will throw out the number 2-4 for the first hour of Raw, which is going to drag down the average something fierce. And I don't know. It's, ratings have been interesting lately. Not a lot of people new people, at least, or old viewers who have given up, that are giving that show a try these days, even with the return of Brock Lesnar?
Well, why would they? I mean, you've had Triple H, Shawn Michaels, The Rock, Chris Jericho, Undertaker. Who else has come back? Now we've got Brock Lesnar. And again, it's still 3-1, and it's again, it's the older fans. I mean, obviously, a lot of them. We've talked about this. Gone, you know, and gone for good. And, you know, it's just Raw is not a must-see show anymore. Even with those guys, it's like, you know, make me believe it. And they're not doing a good job making anybody believe it. And I know they'll get lulled into a false sense of security when it comes to this WrestleMania buy rate. And again, WrestleMania is going to break its own record probably from here on out every single year unless they completely, I mean, unless something bizarre happens. WrestleMania is always going to do well. And I'm surprised the number is as high as it is, or at least as high as they're reporting it is. But it doesn't stun me. You know, one of the things that everybody forgets about when it comes to buy rates is, you know, pay-per-view now is bigger than ever, and it grows by leaps and bounds every day as far as access to it. So it's not a complete surprise that they're going to get that WrestleMania number, but they're going to use that number to put out there and hype up. And, you know, their stock is as low as it's ever been, or as low as it's been in quite some time. And if they fall in and get lulled into that false sense of security, that's bad. You know, one plus is they have Brock Lesnar now immediately after WrestleMania. You know, right after WrestleMania used to mean something about debuting guys and doing things. They have a new lease on life with that, at least, instead of waiting for doing what they've done the past couple of years, which is have a summer blockbuster, whether it be CM Punk, whether it be Nexus, whether it's blowing up Vince McMahon in a limo, whether it be any of that stuff. They at least have something now where they have all summer and they have an ability to plan and do well, but again, you have to believe it. You know, they've gone into a WrestleMania malaise, you know, year after year after year. So why is anybody going to, you know, who watch WrestleMania, why would they tune in on Raw on Monday? They've been burned with it so much in the past. They fall out. They lose interest. They have the big summer thing pop up. People get interested again. They tend to screw it up for most of the people watching. So they tune right back out. And then we go into the cycle of Royal Rumble and, hey, we're back to WrestleMania again. They have something on a silver platter here with Brock Lesnar. I don't understand. You know, look, you gave a guy a contract that was way loaded in his favor. Let's just say it's a 75-20, let's call it an 80-20 contract for how many dates he works compared to other guys. An 80-20 contract, he gets his own sponsors on his shirts, all of that sort of stuff. He's treated, you know, higher than anybody else. He's perceived higher than The Rock, I think, had been in WWE over the last couple of months. You gave him this 80-20 contract and put him in a position where he's 90-10, why would you go with 50-50 booking him having lose to Cena? And that's, again, there's probably, you know what, you're not the only one, Brian. There's probably a lot of people out there, fan-wise, that probably believe that, and why would they tune in to watch? You know, WWE, much like TNA, it's amazing that these companies have to prove what the fans think is wrong, but obviously they do. For as much as they talk about the fans or they complain about fans and things like that, when you look at the ratings all year, a 3-1, and this week it is going to be even lower because, as you said, nobody ever watches the first hour. It'll be interesting to see where they have this. Again, they have something on a silver platter, and it'll be interesting to see where they go with it, because if Cena wins, again, what, I'll ask you, if Cena wins, what then do you do with Brock Lesnar?
Well, I would presume that John Cena would win, and then Brock Lesnar would destroy him afterwards.
I guess, I mean, banana peel, but even, it's going to have to be a hell of a creatively placed banana peel and something intricate. Call Pat Patterson to book that finish, because I don't know how you're going to do it and not have people revolt over it. I can't fathom that. I mean, Brock Lesnar should be, you know, donking off a top guy every week. I mean, use the Alberto Del Rio thing later on down the line. Have the last guy he goes through be Randy Orton, because this, frankly, they should be de-emphasizing Cena and making Randy Orton the guy for WWE this year, because he's at least a badass. Nobody actually believes Brock Lesnar's going to get his ass kicked by any of these guys on the roster for the most part. Obviously, you make the jokes about him having a weak chin and the whole nine yards, but let's be real here. So, you know, Randy Orton being at least a badass that people can get behind should be the last guy he goes through as the portal to Rock, Austin, a rebuilt Cena, you know, God knows, whoever it is that it's going to be at the end, Wade Barrett, who the hell knows, you know, something like that where, you know, just somebody who's being rebuilt and strong, I don't know. It's scary. And with what they did with The Rock last year, and he wasn't even around to screw up, but they figured out a way to make people not care. It'll be interesting to see what they do with Brock Lesnar.
1.3 million buys is what they're saying for WrestleMania, which is actually, their original prediction was 1.3 million. And then on the day of the show, they actually downgraded their own prediction to 1 million. And now it's back looking to be 1.3 million as they'd originally predicted. And of course, it is a very preliminary number. It's going to be, actually, realistically, it's probably going to be about a year before we know what the actual number is because so many late buys come in. There's a chance, the actual number right now is a little bit below 1.3, but because late buys come in and that sort of thing, they're expecting it'll probably end up about 1.3 million. It could end up 1.25 million, for example, which is the current record. It will either tie or be slightly above or slightly below the record. So, you know, no way to look at this as a bad number. The key was the international business was up big. Domestically, it did pretty much what everybody expected it would do. But the international numbers, because Rock is a gigantic superstar, Rock is a way bigger movie star overseas than he is in America. And that boosted the international buy significantly. And as I mentioned when I was reviewing the show, I was watching the show with some international viewers who had flown from all over the place, flown from Europe, flown from Australia. These people were so happy that Rock beat John Cena, virtually weeping. They were so happy. And that paid off for WWE. And next year, if Rock wrestles again, probably be same situation if they build it up right. Probably going to be The Rock versus Brock Lesnar, but a lot of that depends on how things go with Brock Lesnar over the next year. Things could go sour. That's a very real possibility when you're dealing with Brock Lesnar, who he doesn't care. He's here to make money. That is the only reason that he is back in WWE, is to make money. And if they mess stuff up and he's not happy, he will leave. And if they screw everything up, it probably will not be Brock Lesnar and The Rock. It'll probably be Rock and John Cena again, even though they built it as once in a lifetime. Well, sometimes you can do something twice in a lifetime. So those are the current predictions for Mania. And what do you think about those matches? What do you think is going to happen when all is said and done? Is it going to be Brock and Rock, or is it going to be Rock and John Cena again?
To me, it's got to be Brock and Rock. It makes the most sense. You get all that stuff leading into the greater New York next year. It could be poor. It could be snowing. And look, it could legit be snowing. And Brock and Rock is still a match that people are going to go out and want to see and would, you know, risk the weather for. So, it would have to be that. If it's not, it's got to be Brock and a rebuilt Cena or an Austin or some. You've got to do something epic because, again, I who knows how they go through the year with this. But Brock should be a monster for until next WrestleMania. He should just be out of control. I am here for the money. You can't stop me. I don't care about WWE. You needed me. I didn't need your sorry asses. And then they need somebody to come out and steal the torch back from them. And as The Rock said last year, or said a couple weeks ago, he wants to be WWE champion again. That's just the best foreshadowing. Have Brock win both belts off both brands. Bring back, he's the only one to ever wear that unified belt, put it on him, and then have The Rock take back the, you know, it's always being WWE, you know, as he said he was, against no matter what John Cena said, he'll take back the belt from Brock. That would be the way I would do it. There's a long time to go.
Funny you should mention weather. It's snowing in the Northeast right now. There is some snow coming to New York City. Well, higher elevations in New York and Pennsylvania. But still, it is April 22nd. Next year, WrestleMania, April 7th, I believe, in the Northeast. Could be a cold day. Could be a cold day. But I guess we'll see what happens. It'll be the I think it'll be the first outdoor Mania in a cold weather climate, or at least a colder weather than down in South Florida, for example, or Phoenix, in a long time. So that one's going to be kind of interesting. Extreme Rules, we got a couple of other matches for next week, including Daniel Bryan versus Sheamus in a best-of-three-falls match. How extreme! So they're going to get some time. And thoughts on that match?
Hey, I like it a lot for Sheamus. I've been a big proponent of keeping Sheamus and Bryan going for as long as you can because it's just better for Sheamus, and it's good use of Daniel Bryan right now, and a far better, again, I like Del Rio, but I didn't want to see Del Rio and Sheamus. I like how this is going, so good on Sheamus.
As far as the rest of the card, what do we have? Potentially Big Show and Cody Rhodes. We've got CM Punk and Chris Jericho, which, by the way, as we were talking about hometowns earlier, I fully expect Chris Jericho to beat CM Punk in his hometown.
I'm just very, very happy and surprised over Chris Jericho using Natty Bo, the official beer of Baltimore, National Bohemian, using that to pour all over CM Punk. I didn't get a chance to mention how much I appreciate that. Go on with yourself, Chris Jericho.
I like the fact that Brock has got his sponsorship deal taken to WWE. That's great. We'll be back in just a moment talking more, actually. I'll get your thoughts after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, Brock Lesnar is going to be wearing fight shorts, and he's sponsored. He's got sponsors on his gear. A first in WWE. What are your thoughts on this sweet deal?
Hey, you know, when you're not happening, I think it's a good move to sometimes, look, obviously WWE wants to control everything, but when you're not, you know, clicking on all cylinders as far as the mainstream goes, to have something like this is not a bad thing to do. It's very smart from Brock Lesnar's side, and for guys like he and Chris Jericho and The Rock and a couple others, I mean, it's good leverage to be able to use now that a precedent has been set with it. So I'm not sure if it was Brock or his people or however that came to be, but very savvy to get that in there. And again, you know, for guys who are going to be more forward-looking down the line, like, you know, Jericho's and things like that, again, really good move. And again, when WWE, when you're not clicking, again, you can only see that something's been sponsored by Skittles or the National Guard, you know, so much, at least. Again, it's something different. It's a different dynamic that's been seen in WWE before, so it makes Brock stand out just a little bit more.
Was he sponsored by Jimmy Jacks?
I don't know. Will Claudio's Cafe sponsor Antonio Cesaro?
It's possible. I guess we'll find out. He debuted on SmackDown, and that, of course, the former Claudio Castagnoli. I will say there are some guys being brought up. And there's some other guys not being brought up yet. And some of those guys not being brought up are a little worried. Because post-WrestleMania is always a time where some dudes sometimes get cut. So, I don't know if any cuts are coming. I mean, I know there's going to be massive revamping of developmental. And maybe some guys will go here, some guys will go there, and maybe some guys will not be going anywhere. I guess we'll find out. But a lot of news coming up, everybody. Don't forget, 3-Hour Raw tomorrow. That's right, 3-Hour Raw, and we'll be back, of course, we'll be back Monday night on the Observer site, WrestlingObserver.com, with a new show. We'll be back here next week as well, here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. Lots of stuff to check out. WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Mike. Thanks to folks at Sports Byline. We'll talk to y'all next week, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.